home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Kicked up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT, on this Thursday, August the 17th of 2017. Our program is presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Legacy Heating and Air. Eric Hansen, he is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. My name is Darren Pritchett, and we are at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, where the South Bend Cubs will wrap up their eight-game homestand tonight by facing the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. South Bend, 6-1 on this homestand. They won 5-1 last night, and they'll try to take 3 out of 4 from this very good Tin Cap team. Coming up tonight at 7:05, our Jordan Automotive Group pregame show starts our coverage at 6:50. We have plenty of Notre Dame football conversation to get to tonight. We are going to bring you some audio from the former Irish quarterback, now quarterback coach of the Fighting Irish, Tom Reese. He'll tell you all about starting quarterback Brandon Wimbush. At 5:30, our IndyInsider.com recruiting update. Tyler James covers all things Fighting Irish recruiting for the South Bend Tribune. He'll bring you our IndyInsider.com recruiting update. My five question of the day, Eric's five biggest takeaways from speaking with Irish defensive line coach Mike Elston. We'll learn about his group coming up in just a little bit. In the 6 o'clock hour, some comments from Fighting Irish linebacker coach Clark Lee. Sean Steyer spent some time with Clark yesterday during the media session at the University of Notre Dame, and we'll have more rapid fire coming up during the 6 o'clock hour. Well, the wind's blowing out at Wrigley Field. I'm not sure you can tell by the score, but the Reds scored 9 times in the second inning. Eric, how many times?
9 times.
Thank you so much, Ferris. Well, the Cubs then scored 1 in the 2nd, 5 in the 4th, and 3 in the 5th to tie the game at 9. The Reds then scored 2 in the top of the 7th. The Cubs have scored 1 in the bottom of the 7th. It's Cincinnati 11, Cubs 10. They have combined for 23 base hits. Last time I checked, they had combined for 8 home runs. So, Reds 11, Cubs 10, bottom of the 7th inning at Wrigley Field. There's a long way to go in that ball game with the wind flowing out. We'll keep you updated as Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat rolls on. We begin with quarterback conversation involving the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Brandon Wimbush, the junior, will start his first collegiate game September 2nd at home against the Temple Owls. You can hear that game on WSBT Radio at 3:30. On September 2nd, our pregame coverage begins at 9 a.m., and we have Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat, our 2.5-hour pregame show live from the press box at Notre Dame Stadium for you from noon to 2:30. I'll be there. Eric will be there. Sean Steyers is joining our team this year. Looking forward to that broadcast. And before we go any further, we got to remind everybody at this time tomorrow, Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly will be live in our WSBT studios. He'll be with us for an hour. He will take your phone calls. You can ask Coach Kelly anything you want about the Fighting Irish football team. So Coach Kelly in our studios tomorrow from 5 to 6. I'll be in Lansing. I'm going to be listening. Sean Steyers and you will be in studio talking to Coach Kelly and getting our listeners on the air so they can talk to Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. So hope you'll join us tomorrow. Now let's talk about that quarterback position. Leading the quarterback room this year is Tom Rees, the former Irish quarterback in his first season as Notre Dame quarterback coach. And you look at Eric's IndyInsider.com depth chart of the quarterback position. No surprises. Brandon Wimbush, number one. Ian Book, two. Avery Davis, three. Montgomery Van Gorder is number four. How good of a fit is Tommy Rees on this coaching staff, coming back to his alma mater to help out Brandon Wimbush?
Well, I think we'll see the results this year, Darren, but on paper, I like it. At first, I was skeptical of the move, not because I didn't think Tommy would be a good college coach and that he wouldn't be a good fit at Notre Dame, but I wondered if he had the tread on the tires to be a college quarterback's coach at this point.
He's a young guy.
Yeah, he's a young guy, and
walking into a pressure cooker.
Exactly. And so, and yet he handled pressure pretty well.
He did.
When he was a player. And, you know, I think Tommy was having coaching thoughts when he was like eight. So he's accumulated. He's been thinking like a coach for a while. You know, I like the chemistry there. I want to see what it looks like under duress. If there's, you know, Notre Dame is playing some really good defensive teams out of the gate. They play three teams that finished in the top 16 in total defense last year in their first three games this year. So what will that look like if the offense sputters a little bit? Will that chemistry look as good? You know, certainly during the offseason, there's been a really good synergy with those, with Chip Long, with Brian Kelly, and with Tommy Rees. Or Tom Rees, whatever we're calling him these days. I'm calling him Tommy.
You can do whatever you want.
Okay. And so that's where I think it will be tested. If things start sputtering, does Brian Kelly, you know, push them out of the way, put them in the back seat, and grab a hold of the steering wheel? Because Brian has been so involved in not only calling plays or formulating the offense, he's been very involved in coaching quarterbacks. I still think he can do that as the CEO because I think it's a strength of his. But again, that dynamic needs to kind of stay in place. It's been there since, let's say, February. And so that's where I think it'll be tested. But in terms of what we've seen so far, you know, I see Brandon Wimbush getting better. We saw Ian Book have a nice end to the spring. And I think Avery Davis, we haven't seen a lot of him, but he's been getting, you know, strong reviews from the people that have been in practice every day.
Let's hear from Tom Rees talk about this brand new offense. Now, he was a quarterback when Brian Kelly was calling the plays at the University of Notre Dame.
And how many times did he rush in 2013 season? How many rushes, including unplanned rushes, did Tommy Rees rush for in 2013?
Eight.
11.
11?
For the season.
For 68 yards, right? Or 122 yards.
I think it was single digits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sacks are factored in the college
he was only sacked eight times, so that means three of those runs were either scrambled or planned runs. The other eight were sacks.
I still wanted to see the infamous Peyton Manning bootleg ran by Tommy Rees for a touchdown. If Peyton Manning can score on that in an NFL regular season game, then it could be done at the college level with Tom Rees. Never got to see it. All right, here is Rees talking about the biggest difference between the offense he ran with Brian Kelly calling the plays and now this brand new offense. Chip Long, Brian Kelly coming together to put together this offense, and Chip Long will be calling the plays.
I mean, Coach Long has brought in, you know, some different scheme things, some different aspects of it. There are certainly things that have stayed true to, you know, Coach Kelly's scheme of the past, and then there's a lot of mesh and carryover between the two systems, and you may call it something different, but it really plays out the same way. No, but Coach Long has brought definitely a certain intensity and a certain attitude to this offense of wanting to be a physical presence and wanting to, you know, be tough and run the football and make big plays and make the plays that, you know, are there when they're asked to make it. And his energy and enthusiasm about the game and about the offense has definitely resonated through the temper of our team. And Coach Long has done a great job of implementing that and making sure everyone understands exactly what's asked of them. And, you know, there's still a lot of things that carry over, and it's been a really healthy blend of the two.
Tom Reese talking about this new offense. You weren't around the offensive coaches a whole lot yesterday. You were focusing on Bayless and Elston, but you know what the most popular word was?
Running.
Run.
Okay.
Run was said a lot. Now, I don't know why the word pass wasn't said more, and that doesn't mean they're not going to pass the ball. Don't get me wrong.
With 12 receivers and 5 tight ends, they better pass a little bit.
Well, they've talked about we're a run-first offense. We're a physical football team. We want to run the football. Then you get to the play-action pass. So we've heard a lot about run, run, run. I mean, do you see running the football to be the key to this offense this year?
I still think, and I got asked about it in chat today, I still think being able to do both well is the key to the offense, because there's going to be teams where their personnel is such, or the way that they are, they're going to cheat one way or the other toward the pass or the run, and you want to be able to take advantage of that. If you're only good at running, you're going to run into a team at some point that can force you to pass, or that you're going to lose a game because you can't pass well too. You want to be able to do both things. When we look at those metrics of teams that land in the playoffs and used to land in the BCS, running offense and pass efficiency were the two offensive benchmarks. So passing well and running when you needed to were very important. And when we look at defensive, run defense is always high up on that list too. So yes, the running game is very important, but a guy asked me, you know, what is Notre Dame ever going to finally have a top 10 defense? I think if they're top 10 in efficiency, that would be great. If they're top 10 in terms of yards per game, I think they're in balance. And you look at the teams that are the top 10 last year, and it was like New Mexico, Air Force, Army, Navy, Georgia Tech. You're looking at triple option
teams,
Appalachian State. If they're from somewhere between 11 and 30, then that's a good spot for them.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Darren Pritchett, 18 minutes after the top of the hour, talking Notre Dame football, specifically offense and the quarterback position. We had a chance to talk to the assistant coaches yesterday. I spent a couple of moments with Notre Dame quarterback Coach Tom Reese. Here was our conversation.
As he prepares for this first start, what are the traits you're seeing on a daily basis that makes you believe that he has a chance to have great success against Temple?
Well, the one we talked about is his demeanor of not getting two up and two down. I think that's something that's important in a quarterback, and you know, he stays even keeled through all that. You know, the second thing about Brandon is that, you know, he wants to be great. You can tell he wants to put the work in. He wants to put in, you know, the extra time, and he's hard on himself, and, you know, as he should be. A lot of great players are. And so I think, you know, he has the right mentality, and now it's just being, you know, more consistent and bringing the energy and bringing, you know, the rest of the offense along with him.
Going back to your playing days just for a second, when you were learning a brand new college offense, when did you start to feel comfortable, and did it take actual game environment in order to start to feel comfortable?
Well, you know, I came early, so I had a semester under my belt before camp. But really going into my first camp that freshman year is when things started to click for me. And I remember, you know, we would throw and do things in the summer, you know, on our own, and we'd have player-run practices. And I remember working through those, and just something just clicked, and the offense kind of just all came together for me. And then that camp, I was able to, you know, use that to my benefit, and you know, from there on out, it really helped. And then obviously playing, you know, adds an extended part of that. But, you know, you can get the reps in practice that really bring the comfort to you.
With all the different wide receiver combinations that Brandon can see in practice, what are the positives having so many guys and so many different combinations as a quarterback?
Well, I think we have a bunch of guys that present different matchups. You know, you don't have just the same guy all over the field. You have different people in different roles that, you know, provide a different matchup that's in our favor. You know, it's extremely important that he continues to work and throw with those guys and gets as many reps as he can with them, just so the timing and they're seeing it the same way. They recognize the defense, and that's been a good part so far this camp.
Finally, for me, just Brian has had the message for the players, grit, attitude. Right. But in the quarterback room, do you have your own messages that you try to drill into the heads of your quarterbacks day in and day out?
Yeah, we have, you know, kind of three pillars that we believe in and three things that we cover and we think that are important to play in the position. And those guys have done a really good job of owning those and, you know, trying to have those traits, you know, on top of what coach asks of them every single day.
That's Tom Reese, the quarterback coach. Talked about Brandon Wimbush's demeanor. He talked about how Wimbush just wants to be great. You spent time with Brandon Wimbush for a piece that was in the Indy Insider magazine, which is still available right now, by golly. You can get it at your favorite magazine rack here in the South Bend area, or go to IndyInsider.com/buy the mag.
You got it.
All right, so plenty of time, a couple of weeks before the season starts. When you just spoke with him, could you sense how great he wants to be? Because I've always heard he is one of those film rats. He's one of those guys that loves to get in the film room and learn.
He is. And again, he doesn't always take the easy route in life because he wants to be better. And I think that the fact that he finally embraced St. Peter's Prep instead of going to Teaneck High, I think kind of showed his maturity at a real young age. You know, all his friends went to Teaneck. He had been a big baseball star growing up. Probably had a really good future in that sport as well. And his mom just felt like he would be better off at St. Peter's Prep for a lot of reasons. And so she sent him there, which entailed a 45-minute commute for him every day. So he had to jump on a train. She was a nurse, so she couldn't be there even to get him ready in the morning. He had to jump on a train by himself. It was usually two trains, sometimes two trains and a bus. And by his sophomore year, he was buying into that. And when he made his college choices, you know, he looked and he saw Everett Golson on the roster and Malik Zaire and Deshaun Kaiser, and he said, I'm not going to worry about who's on the depth chart ahead of me. I'm going to Notre Dame because I think this is the best for me. And so, yes, I feel like he's a very committed guy in terms of sometimes taking the path of most resistance to get better.
When you think about the start of this season, what the offense is going to look like with Brandon Wimbush running this offense, first-time starter, in terms of going back to Notre Dame running the football, do you feel like the read option is going to be a big part of this offense, or will it be anywhere close to what we saw with Deshaun Kaiser as the starting quarterback?
I don't think it will be as much. I think there will be some of that. I think with Brandon, you might see more bootleg action, for example, where he has an option to pass or run off of that boot action. And maybe plan runs like sweeps and so forth rather than, you know, trying to read the defensive end and then deciding whether to put the ball in Josh Adams' belly or take it himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can do that, and I've seen him do that, but I don't know that that's the best way to use him because, again, he's a guy that can run away from a defense if he gets into the second level. And I also think you want to minimize the contact with him on planned runs. You can certainly get outside on zone read plays, but there are times you can't. And I think Kaiser, you know, with having Malik as the backup and Wimbush as the third teamer, you know, I think you felt more comfortable with him doing that. But I think Chip Long is going to add a different wrinkle to a running quarterback.
One of the things we probably don't know yet is how good he's going to be on a broken play. I think we probably can envision how good it's going to be, because when you get him matched up with a linebacker or a defensive end chasing him, Brandon Wimbush is going to normally win that opportunity. So I think it's going to be fun to see the evolution of plays breaking down and what Wimbush can do. There's some quarterbacks that just kind of hold their own, make a little something out of nothing, just throw the ball away. And there'll be times Wimbush will throw it away, but he brings that game-breaking opportunity when he gets outside the pocket or a play breaks down. He's one of those quarterbacks, it seems like, the play is never over until truly that whistle blows. You cannot take a breath as a defender with him on the field.
The one thing that I really like about his skill set and kind of how he came up through St. Peter's Prep is that Brandon was a pocket passer first and a runner very secondarily. And he certainly has the skills to be an incredible runner. And so he can extend plays a couple ways. He's not going to tuck it and run too fast, because in his mind, mm-hmm. he's still churning and thinking about making that pass play and using his feet to extend the play to be able to complete that. But then he also has pretty good instincts in, okay, I need to tuck it and go at this point. You know, I think Malik was often running way too early in the sequence. I think Kaiser sometimes held on to the ball too long and took a sack instead of throwing it away, or instead of extending the play some other way. I think Brandon brings a really nice balance with that. I'm eager to see that in action, but in practice, we've seen that. You know, the one thing that we haven't seen much in practice, Darren, is him running for 80 yards on a broken play. Because why? Because they blow it dead if somebody's within 10 yards of him and have no chance to touch him. They'll blow the play dead. The coaches, I mean.
The defense, in a couple of days for Temple, they will not have that opportunity.
Right.
It is full throttle. Can't wait to see what happens. So that's some Notre Dame quarterback conversation with the help of quarterback coach Tom Reese. Coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, you'll hear from Notre Dame linebacker coach Clark Lee. But coming up next, you're going to hear from Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. You'll get a little soap theme, and then you'll get plenty of Notre Dame football recruiting knowledge from Tyler as Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
It is that time of the week where we talk Fighting Irish football recruiting with Tyler James. He is the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. He joins us every Thursday at 5:30.
We should have played Barry Manilow for Tyler James. He's a big Barry Manilow fan, I hear.
Really?
Looks like we made it.
Oh, Mandy.
See, I mentioned this the other day when I rode with Eric and Mike to Chicago for the Notre Dame-Wisconsin announcement. I rode with you guys twice so far this year. Tyler was in the car the first time we went to Culver. I'm very disappointed. I've heard all of these Mike Burrell rumors. He's jamming to Taylor Swift, and I have not heard a Taylor Swift song yet in your car.
Because I'm the driver. I'm the dad in the car. And we're listening to my music. But in my chat today, I got asked about Barry Manilow, and I also got asked for relationship advice.
I don't know where to come
relationship advice go.
This guy wanted to get out of going to his fiance's great-grandma's wake because it was the same night as his fantasy draft, football draft, and he wondered if there was any way he could get out of that. And I said, yeah, if you want to be single again.
Yeah, that's... That was good advice.
Okay.
That's not good thinking on his part.
Right.
I know fantasy football is very important, but not a good idea. Not a good idea. Well, let's see if we get any type of advice from Tyler here as we talk Fighting Irish football recruiting. Kevin Austin, we talked about him last week. Tyler, wide receiver recruit that was considering Notre Dame. You felt like he was going to pick Notre Dame. He sure did. So I don't know if you want to add anything on Austin. And then I guess the second part of the question is, what's next at wide receiver? Is there a need for that speed guy that they lost to Oregon a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I do think you're right there. Kevin Austin, 6'3", 185-pound. Wow, I really messed that up. Wide receiver.
Oh, that Barry Manilow talk got you all nervous.
Sure did. And so Kevin's a talented player. I think can do a number of different things at the wide receiver position, and they're pairing him with Micah Jones, who's a big receiver at 6'5". So I think, like you mentioned, the need at left now is some sort of speed there. Kevin Austin has good but not great speed. I don't know how much you're going to stretch the field with him. I don't know that he's going to be that true kind of deep threat. I think he'll be able to make some plays, but I think, and we've seen that Notre Dame has tried to address the speed issue with bringing in those grad transfers, Cam Smith, who Brian Kelly has been praising throughout preseason camp, and Freddie Canteen. So I think that's kind of the hole they need to fill. I think maybe Michael Young in the previous class could be helping in making that not as big of a need in this class, but I do think that that's probably where Notre Dame's going to turn for a third receiver moving forward in the 2018 class. Jordan Porter out of Rancho Cucamonga, California, is a recruit that they had started to pursue. It ran a 10.68 in the 100-meter dash in track season this past spring, so that's a name to keep an eye on. He hasn't visited yet, but I do expect him to eventually visit. Lawrence Keys, 5'11", 160 pounds, out of New Orleans, is another speedy receiver. Doesn't have as good a size as Jordan. Jordan's 6'2", but definitely has some playmaking ability, and has been a name Notre Dame's been keeping an eye on for a while now, and I think he even knows Michael Young, so maybe there's a chance that Notre Dame gets something rolling there if they get him on campus. So I think those are probably the two most important names probably to keep an eye on in terms of the wide receivers. There's some other bigger names. Obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Cameron Babb, Chase Cota, Tommy Bush, that have mentioned Notre Dame, have shown interest in Notre Dame, but I think that maybe they're probably long shots at this point. But so I think Jordan and Lawrence probably what you will be focusing on, although we'll keep track of who they get on campus in the fall, because certainly a good season from Notre Dame, especially from an offensive standpoint, could really elevate Notre Dame in the eyes of some wide receivers.
Tyler, what I can't figure out, let's say Notre Dame signs four wide receivers in this class, even three. Okay, you're only losing for sure Cameron Smith. Let's say you lose Cameron Smith and Equanimeous St. Brown goes pro early. That would give you 13 or 14 receivers next year. I'm confused by the math, but maybe you can explain it.
Yeah, I think they just they're in a situation where they like to, I mean, they've always brought in multiple receivers. They haven't really. Last year was a rarity with only bringing in two wide receivers. So, I think it's a position we've seen some attrition at. We got guys like Corey Holmes have left the program. Jalen Guyton is another guy in recent years that left at the wide receiver position. So I think you just sort of anticipate that at wide receiver. Maybe that's the thinking moving forward. So. I just feel like wide receiver is a guy, and obviously there's always a chance of a wide receiver switching positions, maybe moving to defensive back. I know you had asked Brian Kelly if maybe there's a chance of anyone on the current roster doing something like that, and he's kind of poo-pooed that, but I think moving forward, I think at least having wide receivers on the roster gives you some flexibility. Maybe you'd rather load up on skill positions like that than maybe some other positions that maybe can't do other things besides the position they're brought in for.
IndyInsider.com recruiting update with Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. A chance to talk to assistant coaches yesterday. You spent some time with recruiting coordinator Mike Elston. What were your big takeaways?
Yeah, I was able to squeeze in some recruiting questions, even though Eric tried to steal my shine by asking him a recruiting question. But the first thing I asked him, and Eric had asked him as well, was kind of what he'd been hearing from recruits in terms of Do kids really want to wait and see what Notre Dame's defense is going to be about before committing? And obviously Notre Dame has kind of gone against that by getting Jack Lamb and Shane Simon in the class late in July, when I thought maybe Notre Dame would have problems getting guys that wanted to decide before their season to get to the class, because maybe they did want to wait and see because there wasn't necessarily a rush. But he was kind of straightforward with that. He said you got to know that kids want to know that information, that they are going to be skeptical about stuff like that, and even if they're not going to come out and straightforward ask you that, be ready to address that and explain where the defense is heading and what they can trust Notre Dame to become. So that's certainly, I think Notre Dame has been able to do that successfully. I think if you're looking at offense and defense, I think the defensive side of the recruiting class might be at a better point right now than the offensive side, which I think would, if you just came into this without really knowing what was going on, you'd be a little surprised about that, considering how last season went and the struggles they've had on defense.
Tyler James is our guest. What about, how will Notre Dame incorporate stadium renovations into recruiting visits in the future?
Yeah, I really thought a little bit about that when I was got the stadium tour last week, and I'm kind of wondering how they would incorporate that. It was interesting. Mike Elston called it a showstopper, and it's not necessarily a huge part of the recruitment for a kid, because they're not in the football stadium on a day-to-day basis. The Goog is more important in many ways than the stadium itself. Mike Elston shows that, in his mind, it shows that Notre Dame does it when they choose to do something, that they do it first class. That was the quote he gave me yesterday. I think when they bring kids on tours, I think it'll be a little bit more of a focal point. They'll have more places to show them in the stadium, specifically like the ballrooms and the club seating areas. I think those are cool places that they'll probably host some lunches and brunches in the stadium. I know they've done stuff in like the press box of the stadium in previous years, but I think the areas that they maybe have at their disposal now could be pretty attractive places to host recruits and get them to settle in and get a feel for what the stadium's like and kind of the atmosphere at Notre Dame, not necessarily on a game day, but also just getting a feel for what the program's like.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Tyler. I mean, there's a lot to show off now. I mean, in last year, it just was, you know, with all the barricades and the dirt and, you know, the unfinished stuff, I wouldn't have been impressed if I were a recruit. It was really hard to envision what it was going to look like finished. I wanted to ask you about the early signing period and how it might impact Notre Dame in this recruiting cycle.
Yeah, I also asked Mike Elston about that, and I think he didn't get into too many details about whether or not they're going to be pushing for guys to sign early. I think they're more or less going to try and play that off of what the recruit wants to do. And one thing that will certainly impact, if they get a sense or hear from kids that want to make these decisions early, that they need to make sure that they get them on campus before early December. I know we've seen kids making official visits in January and trying to make their decisions after that. But if these guys are really interested in signing early and maybe have close feelings to some other schools, that Notre Dame needs to make sure that they get them on campus for official visits during the season for games. And Mike Elston even mentioned maybe even moving up a visitor's weekend earlier in December. Traditionally, there's a big weekend around the awards banquet, but I think maybe even the weekend before that, maybe they try and bring in some kids if that is the case, where they find some guys that are ready to make they want to try and sign in December because they can, but Notre Dame hasn't had a chance to host them. So that would be an interesting wrinkle to see how that plays out. I don't expect it to impact Notre Dame too much in terms of guys signing early, but I think that Notre Dame is at least being smart and kind of being proactive and figuring out how to work around stuff like that.
Indianapolis cornerback DJ Johnson's going to announce his college choice on Tuesday. Notre Dame is in the running. Do you like their chances?
I don't currently. I think that Notre Dame might lose out to Iowa in his recruitment. Iowa has done a really good job in recruiting in Indiana, recruiting some other players out of the Indianapolis area. Obviously recruited an area tight end here from Penn High School, Anthony Torres. So I think it's kind of tough for Notre Dame. Obviously, cornerback is a position we talk about regularly in this recruiting class because they don't have any commitments, and they also didn't get any in the last class. So it's definitely a big loss in terms of perception because Notre Dame needs cornerbacks, and he's an in-state kid. I'm less certain of how big of a loss it is from a talent standpoint. I think if he wasn't from Indiana, many people might not make too much of a big deal about it because I think he is a regional level recruit. He's got mostly Big Ten offers, so he's not quite a national recruit, but it's all going to matter of what Notre Dame does beyond DJ Johnson and his decision. If they can't get cornerbacks that are more talented than him or that they like more than him, then they're in a tough spot then. So it's not the best situation for Notre Dame to be in, and it seems to be continuing that way, but I think the one cornerback I do feel confident in for them is Dante Burton out of Georgia, who has visited previously. So Notre Dame needs to get the ball rolling there. I spoke to Todd Light a little bit about cornerback recruiting, and he thinks that it is a selling point that they're going to try and use, the fact that they didn't get any recruits in the last class, that there is maybe some early playing time opportunities, but they certainly haven't been able to strike on that so far.
Tyler, you know, at first when this kind of was happening, I didn't want to overreact to it, but I'll tell you what, it's getting more awkward and strange as it goes along. I mean, can you put your finger on it? Is it because those five corners already on campus are so good? Is it something that Todd Light's not doing? Because when you look at this defense, the one area that doesn't really need to prove itself are the cornerbacks.
Right. Yeah, and I did ask him about that. I said, do you think it was tougher to recruit last year because of there were so many freshman cornerbacks playing? And he did admit to that, and I think I agree with him there, but I don't know that at least these guys that are moving forward as sophomores, that those guys should be guys that are deterrents to these kids in the 2018 class. Obviously, I think maybe telling them that they could play right away isn't necessarily probably going to be true, because if these kids are coming back as juniors, they're probably certainly going to be playing ahead of kids as freshmen. But I don't really know what's going on there. I think it is a bit troubling. I think Todd Light knows that, and I think he wants to improve on that. So we're going to have to see what happens. I obviously they've shown the ability to get commitments in the class, but they haven't been able to hold on to them. Kalen Gervin being the latest one from Detroit, and we recently saw someone had named him the best recruit from Michigan in the state of Michigan for the 2018 class. So I think that's tough for Notre Dame to keep seeing cornerbacks maybe going elsewhere. So they're going to have to figure things out. I think they'll I don't know what they have to do. I don't know if Mike Elko needs to maybe help out more there. We know that he has helped out quite a bit in terms of being a defensive coordinator and recruiting. And Mike Elston spoke very highly of what he's done as a recruiter so far at Notre Dame. So it's certainly the most intriguing and most befuddling part of Notre Dame's recruiting class right now.
Tyler, as a media member on Sunday at the open scrimmage, anything in particular you're going to be watching for?
Not necessarily. I'm interested to see what it's like. I know we had some discussions in the office of how many people are actually going to show up and be there. We're kind of curious about that. But in terms of the team, I just want to hopefully see some live action, some good one-on-one situations, and get some full contact stuff. I know we've seen two practices in full, but we only got one practice in full pad, so that we got to see the full practice of. So just some football is what I'd like to see.
I'm with you there. Tyler James, what do you have coming up in the South Bend Tribune or IndyInsider.com or both?
Yeah, I'm working on a story right now about Nick Coleman. Spoke to him recently and then spoke to the coaches just yesterday, of course. And so we'll have a story on him. And then hopefully maybe next week you'll be working on a recruiting reset series just to kind of reset where Notre Dame's at every position in the class with not a lot of news scheduled until the kids start getting on campus for official visits.
I was there when Tyler was interviewing Nick. It's going to be a very good piece. There's some really good questions and answers in that particular session. He is Tyler James, and he is the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend. I'm not sucking up to him. I was being honest. You looked at me like I was sucking up to him or something.
I thought you were going to start singing a Barry Manilow tune to him. You were so infatuated.
No, it was a good. I actually have it on tape.
Okay.
So if you want to listen to it, then you'd be like, wow, Darren's right again.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. I have full confidence in Tyler.
I know you do, but I just want to make sure. You just gave me that look like, oh my gosh, you never say that about me.
Well, that's a little bit true.
I'm in between you two.
There you go. All right, Tyler, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
Tyler James, Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune, joins us every Thursday at 5:30. When we come back, the wonderful and magnificent Eric Hansen will provide five stimulating answers to today's My Five question of the day, which is his five biggest stimulating takeaways from talking to defensive line coach Mike Elston. Please stick around for this excellence next. Is that a little better?
Awesome.
Thank you. On 96.1 FM, WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
During our media session on Wednesday with Notre Dame assistant coaches, Eric hung around defensive line coach Mike Elston, put together a story on Mike and that defensive line group. So we asked this My Five Question of the Day, Eric's five biggest takeaways from talking to defensive line coach and recruiting coordinator Mike Elston. We begin with number five.
Number five, I'm going to say the truth about Darnell Yule. I really wanted to hear from his position coach what his progress was like and why he wasn't in the two deeps, why that wasn't happening for him. And he said Darnell has not been a disappointment at all, that his work ethic is great, his knowledge of the game is great. Where he is lacking, and this happens sometimes, he equated it to the situation with Lewis Nix at Jacksonville Reigns, that sometimes you don't have a position coach that's teaching you the finer techniques of the game. Whereas Kurt Heinisch and Myron Taigavaloa-Mosa went to programs where that was taught. And so that part of the game is where he's playing catch-up. Once he plays catch-up with that, he's going to be the player that they thought he would be walking in the door.
Is this something you feel like he can gain traction with during the fall practice season, before games? I mean, it would seem like this is the time right now to really take hold.
This is the time to take hold. You know, once you get kicked down to the scout team, you're not getting as much individual coaching then because you're not on the quote-unquote varsity and so forth. But I think Darnell will take it upon himself. And again, if he redshirts this year, it's not the end of the world. Lewis Nix did the same thing. Harrison Smith did the same thing. So, you know, I think that I think he's on the right track, and that's really what I wanted to get to the bottom of.
Number four.
Number four, about Mike's first steps with retaking over the defensive line. He'd been the linebackers coach the last 3 years, had been the defensive line coach his first 4 years at Notre Dame. And he said the biggest thing that he had to get from those guys were accountability and the care factor. He felt like both of those things were lacking from that position group last year.
And that has showed. We've talked about how it just feels like there's a good relationship between defensive lineman and position coach.
Absolutely.
Eric's five biggest takeaways from talking to defensive line coach Mike Elston, number three.
The evolution of Dalen Hayes from a five-star outside linebacker into a college defensive end. And I thought part of the interesting part of that conversation was, I said part of twice, wonderful grammar, but part of that was that Dalen felt like, you know, there were all these expectations from him being a five-star recruit. He should know these things. He shouldn't have to be taught these things. So sometimes with coaching points, there was a little bit of a pushback in that he was disappointed with himself that he should have known that. And Mike Elston finally had a heart-to-heart with him and said, look, Dalen, you're learning a new position. And the reason that you have a position coach is because you don't know everything as a freshman or a sophomore in college. And once he had that buy-in, you started to see a big rise in Dalen Hayes' game.
Number two.
You know, what was going on with Jerry Tillery? Why is he an improved player? You know, it's for one thing to say a guy, oh, yeah, he's improved. He's doing well. Why is Jerry Tillery improved? And one of the things that Mike Elston pointed out was that Jerry, when he was playing defensive tackle last year, would take the path of least resistance. If there was a double team, instead of trying to defeat the double team, he would get scooped out of the gap and end up
taking himself out of the play.
So the double team achieved its, you know, Jerry would get free, but then there was a gap where the running back would be able to run through, and that's not what you do. And what they're seeing this year in practice is Jerry taking on those double teams and having the strength and the fortitude to fight through them.
My five question of the day, Eric's five biggest takeaways from talking to defensive line coach Mike Elston. Number five, got to the bottom of why Darnell Yule is not on the depth chart right now. Number four, Elston retaking over the defensive line position. Number three, evolution of Dalen Hayes. Number two, why is Jerry Tillery an improved football player? And we're up to your biggest takeaway from your conversation with defensive line coach Mike Elston.
I think how open Mike was, and he's the recruiting coordinator too, about how that he wants recruits to ask about the defensive line, that he accepts the fact that they're taking a leap of faith, and he's okay with them having to see a product on the field before they're ready to jump in with both feet. You know, they've had a lot, they've gotten commitments from a lot of top recruits. There's some really good ones out there like Thomas Booker and Jason Owe, defensive ends, that I think need to see a little bit more, and he's okay with that. And I think that's healthy for Notre Dame to kind of hang a light on that and say, yeah, this is where we are, and we're willing to show it to you.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. He's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. While we have a second before we get to the top of the hour in CBS Sports, an update on the Reds and the Cubs, a day in which the wind is blowing out. It is now Cincinnati 13, the Cubs 10. Chicago coming to the plate in the bottom of the ninth inning. They'll have Bryant, Rizzo, and Zobrist, so they've got a good shot in the bottom of the ninth inning. But again, the Reds scored 9 times in the second inning. The Cubs scored 1 in the second, 5 in the fourth, 3 in the sixth to tie it. But the Reds have scored 2 in the seventh, 1 in the eighth, and 1 in the ninth. They have bullied the Cubs bullpen over the last 2 days. Justin Grimm, who has just been hit every time he takes the mound this year, gave up a home run in the seventh inning. Wilson has given up another run. Rondon has given up a run. So it is 13-10, Cincinnati over the Cubs in the bottom of the ninth inning. Braves lead the Rockies by a score of 10-2. The Rays are trailing the Blue Jays 3-1 in the sixth inning. Couple of final scores. The Indians beat the Twins 9-3. Diamondbacks shut out the Astros 4-0. So in the wild card chase, Diamondbacks and Rockies are the wild card teams. 1-1, one lost. Brewers are idle today. Game and a half behind the Cubs. St. Louis 2.5 back. We'll see how they blow tonight's game in Pittsburgh. Mr. Hansen, are you ready to tell us all about the great things that are coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports section?
Absolutely. We will have the best and the worst of today's chat transcript. Tyler mentioned his story on Nick Coleman, which you hyped, which I don't know how anybody can't run out to their paper box tomorrow and read. And then we will have whatever happens with this Cubs-Reds game where they're both in double digits in the ninth inning.
Sounding like Brock Osweiler is going to start for the Browns on Monday night against the Giants. DeShone Kizer will be the number two quarterback for the Browns against the New York football Giants.
I think that's a good place to be right now. He's drafting off of Brock Osweiler like a NASCAR car.
I agree with you. No sense being the starter in the preseason. Just builds up even more hype. I think it's good. He just kind of comes off the bench, does his thing. Now, if they really want him to be the starter, week three would be a good time to put him in that spot, because that's when the starters for the opposition will play the most, and you like to see him a little bit longer against a quality defense.
I agree.
Otherwise,
you know, I think it's a process. Just take your time. They want to bring him along deliberately, so do that.
I will talk to you tomorrow.
Beautiful.
All right. He's Eric. I'm Darren. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards.
Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Hour number two of Budweiser's weekday sports feed on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Legacy Heating and Air. Sean Stiers from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs at Four Winds Field. It is South Bend and Fort Wayne, final game of a four-game series, final game of an eight-game homestand. The Cubs are 6-1 on this homestand. Tonight's first pitch at 7:05. The Jordan Automotive Group pregame show starts our coverage at 6:50. So we've got 43 minutes to talk more Notre Dame football and get to rapid fire. And maybe at some point the Cubs and Reds will finish their game. It's 13-10, Cincinnati, bottom of the ninth inning. And it looks like the Cubs have a runner on second base with one out and Ben Zobrist at the plate. In fact, it looks like there's two outs. My game tracker is a little slow, apparently.
Yeah, I think I saw Zobrist just struck. I was just looking at that myself, and I hit refresh at one point, and somehow it jumped back to the eighth inning, and then it just refreshed, and it showed that Zobrist had struck out. So I think.
Well, it looks like Avila just made an out too, and that's the third out of the ball game. So I believe the Reds just beat the Cubs, 13-10. The Cubs trailed 9-0, came back to tie the ball game at 9. And Avila strikes out, and the Reds win by a score of 13-10. John Lester, an inning and two-thirds, 7 hits, 9 runs, 7 earned, a walk, no strikeouts. His ERA for the year now at 4.37. He's had two ugly starts over the last month. So the Cubs lose today. Milwaukee is idle, so they're a game back. St. Louis will be at Pittsburgh tonight. They're now two games back, and the Cubs continue to sell a lot of tickets in Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and Milwaukee by just not playing consistent, solid baseball. I do have to ask this. Did you see the Ben Zobrist bunt attempt last night?
I did. I did see it.
Joe Madden got tossed as the pitch was down and into Zobrist. The ball hits him. The umpires decide that he actually tried to bunt the ball. So anytime you try to bunt or you swing and the ball hits you, it is not a hit by pitch. Madden erupted, got thrown out of the ball game, and was very aggressive to say the umpires are wrong in the post-game comments last night. In fact, he used some very graphic terminology to describe
yes, he did.
What he thought of the particular play. You've watched the replay from the side. You've watched it live. Do you think Zobrist bunted at that baseball?
I don't think he did. I mean, he might have been holding the bat, but at the point where he's still holding the bat, he all of a sudden is realizing, hey, I'm about to get hit by a pitch, and he's trying to kind of turn and move, but that ball got in on him so fast, I just don't think he reacted quick enough. But I don't think that he offered at it, though.
The side view shows the bat went forward. And I could see where the umpires came up with that conclusion. The bat, he pushed the bat at the ball. Now, whether it was in the movement of trying to get out of the way, how did the umpires know whether he truly attempted to bunt or as part of the action to get out of the way?
Right.
The bat went forward, so I felt like they got the call right, and I thought Madden was wrong. But again, that's taking slow motion and seeing it from
exactly. The
dugout first base side. You can't tell when you've got the center field camera shooting at home plate, but in the process of getting out of the way, the bat did go forward, in my opinion.
Yeah, and again, he was holding it out there. You see that a lot of times where a lot of times the guy is just holding the bat in a bunt stance in front of the plate, and he never brings it back, and they'll still call a ball, and they don't call a strike as if he had offered at it, when I think it's more obvious than in the situation last night. What was crazy is, as you said, Joe Maddon goes crazy and gets into the umps, and then on the other side, Mike Matheny got ejected from his game as well.
Did you see that?
One of those nights. I saw the aftermath. It was just all these managers going crazy last night.
Well, the home plate umpire in the Red Sox-Cardinals game, with the game on the line, the Cardinal reliever, Brebbia, held the ball a long time. The Red Sox batter never called time, and just as Brebbia started to throw the ball, the home plate umpire called time.
Right.
And you could hear from the field mics, he told Matheny, "I called time because I needed a break."
Really? I didn't even
hear
that.
I have never heard of an umpire calling time because he needed a break.
So he called
the batter,
time on his own. Interesting.
Yeah. MLB Network took the video and brought it closer, and the batter for the Red Sox never moved his lips, never took his hands off the bat. He never called time, but yet the umpire says he needed a break.
Wow.
To make things worse, his strike zone was horrible for both teams last night, so both sides were on him, so I'm sure he had a short fuse, and just, I think he got caught up in the moment, a big moment in the ninth inning, and just needed a break.
That's interesting, and I think we're at that time of year now where it's mid-August, and it's dog days, and everyone is just a little bit more on edge right now between both players and umpires, because there was a situation in Detroit with Ian Kinsler calling out Angel Hernandez. I know a lot of people call that Angel Hernandez, and he was a lot worse with that. Apparently they made up, but you've just had a lot of that stuff going on here in the last few days where obviously the games don't matter as much in Detroit, but you've still got frustrations and tensions one way or another. Mm-hmm. You've just got all these guys going at each other right now.
So to wrap up our baseball talk again, the Cubs lose to Cincinnati this afternoon, 13-10. Brewers now a game back, idle today, at Colorado tomorrow. St. Louis two back, they're at Pittsburgh tonight. White Sox gave up 3 in the ninth last night. They lost to the Dodgers, who are now 51 games over 500, a 5-4 LA win. Nicky Delmonico, doing great things for the White Sox. This rookie has been really good, hit 2 solo home runs, but the Sox bullpen fell apart in the ninth inning. Yasiel Puig walks off the White Sox, and the Dodgers won 5-4 Sox in Texas tonight. Now to our Notre Dame football conversation. Sean spent time with defensive coaches yesterday during our media session, and one of the individuals that Sean spoke with was Notre Dame linebacker coach Clark Lee. We have a couple of sound bites from Coach Lee. First off, here is Clark talking about defensive coordinator Mike Elko, a guy he worked with at Wake Forest.
When you look at your position group, I mean, it seems like you kind of got a group that they were obviously probably about as the most experienced of any of the units and all that kind of stuff. But were there any kind of habits that you had to break them of when you came in?
You know, I think I would be careful, you know, with necessarily talking about breaking habits. I think each one of these guys, no matter, you know, what year they're at in their career, you know, how far along they are, they're all works in progress, just like we all are. And so, you know, my responsibility is to take them over at whatever point they are, and then to build into them and get them to their highest level before they graduate. Some guys that'll be 4 years, some guys that'll be one, you know. I will say this, though. The defense is different, and the demands and what we ask of them to do is different. The coaching style is different. And so certainly there are a lot of things that we have had to and continue to work on, both in terms of the technical and tactical side of things, but also the mental side of things, in order for us to function at our highest level, you know, when we get into a game situation.
Right. Well, and then Coach Kelly's talked about the buy-in and all those kind of things when we've talked to him. I mean, you've got guys who pretty much the guys we would expect are out there, so I assume you've got pretty good buy-in from all these guys.
Yeah, and I think there's no black and white when you're dealing with human relationships, there's you don't walk in and immediately get, you know, the mandate that we're going to trust this guy and he's going to lead us to the promised land. You know, I mean, this takes time and it is work and it's relationship building. And so I think sometimes when you take over an experienced unit and you want to shift the paradigm a little bit, you know, you really have to dig in and make sure they know where you're coming from and why you're doing what you're doing and have some patience in explaining it. And coach them at the level they are. I mean, some of these guys have played a lot of football, and so, you know, I want to coach them in a manner that teaches them finer points of the game. And usually that kind of relationship leads to trust, and trust leads to buy-in. And obviously, you know, that's talking strictly from a position coach standpoint, that you know, these things take time. And I'll say this to you, with the guys I took over from the first day, it's never been, they've defaulted to go at it 100 miles an hour, and, you know, they never once have balked, or, you know, I've never had to deal with a bad attitude, or, you know, we've had bad days, but, I mean, it's never been because of the spirit of the unit, and I think that speaks to the guys that I'm coaching. You know, they want to win. They want to leave a legacy here, and they're willing to do whatever you ask them to do to get that done.
When you look at Niles out there, when we get to see him at practice, I mean, he looks physically like a different guy, and his play looks like it's really come to another level as well. Where have you seen the biggest jump for him since you've been here?
You know, I think just, you know, Niles has played a lot of football. I think he's still learning the system, and as he's learned the system, you know, and become comfortable, it's allowed him to kind of unleash and go play. I think we're asking maybe a little bit less of him as far as, you know, all the communication and formational adjustments that may have been folded into things in the past. And so when he's kind of released that and just focused on his responsibility, I think he's played faster and had success. I think the other thing that I've been really impressed with him, and again, here's a senior who, you know, is going into his final season, but he has allowed me to coach him technically and fundamentally every day, and seeks feedback on performance, and has bought into the techniques that we teach, and I think he's seeing success from that too, and I think that's kind of fed into his performance on the field.
Last one for me, Drew Tranquil, obviously coming down by the line of scrimmage now, and he's part of your group as well. Is he even close to his peak yet right now?
Well, he has got an exceptional skill set for what we're asking him to do, and so anytime I've had a position change kind of late like this, you know, what I've found is progress continues from fall camp to the last game of the season. And so is he close to his ceiling? Probably not. Is he playing at a high level? Yes. Is he making mistakes? Certainly, but that's part of the learning curve. But I would expect him to continue to build to a crescendo through the season and, you know, be playing his best football, you know, when it matters. Really.
That is Sean speaking with Notre Dame linebacker coach Clark Lee. A lot of good topics were talked about in that particular soundbite. It's interesting, you take a look at Lee. He's got a veteran group of starters to work with. You've got Niles Morgan at middle linebacker, a senior. We have Greer Martini, who we have seen a lot of over the years. He's been known as that academy guy who always gets double-digit tackles when they right. take on Navy or Army, but now has a bigger role on the defense this year. He's another senior. And then you've got the senior, Drew Tranquil, moving down from safety to Rover. I'm sure we'll still see him at safety from time to time. So, you know, Clark has the great fortune of teaching this new defense to a bunch of guys who have been there and done that. And you talk about all these question marks on the defensive side of the football. The one thing I think we can all count on is terrific play from middle linebacker Niles Morgan. Sean, you're exactly right. How he has changed his body. I think fans will notice a different quickness from Niles Morgan, even compared to last year when he was really, really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like he wasn't in shape last year. He was a terrific football player, but he just looks lightning quick this year thanks to the new strength and conditioning program.
And we got to be even closer to him the other day when they were practicing in the stadium, because we got to stand on the sideline. So when they were doing some of their drills, you know, those linebackers were right over there next to us. I mean, and it was really evident at that point when you see him and just the physique that he has. But to kind of go back a little bit, when sitting there talking with Clark Lee, this is a guy from Nashville, Tennessee, but sitting there next to him, and when you listen to him, I almost feel like I'm just hanging out with this dude on the beach, yeah. And you're kind of kicking back, and he's so relaxed, and he's just got this really mellow attitude, and I have to think that with the different personalities on the coaching staff, and just with, especially with the experience level that we're kind of talking about with these three guys specifically, Morgan, Martini, and Tranquil, that has to play well to them, because he can just sort of sit back, analyze, communicate what he needs from them, and because of their experience, they've obviously been able to go out and do what he asked them to do, because they're showing it right now when we've got to see him.
Like I mentioned, Sean, Greer Martini has a chance to shine this year as the weak side linebacker. We'll see what his role is going to be on second and third down specialty packages. I'm not sure how he's going to fit in.
Right.
But when you think about playing Temple, Georgia, Michigan State, Stanford, it would sure seem like he would have a big role for this football team. Just those hard-nosed offenses, you need some physical players in order to deal with those running games.
That's absolutely right. You need a big physical linebacker, and that is exactly what he is. 6'4" and 236 pounds. And, I mean, Morgan is listed at 235, and he's a little more stout, I guess, not quite as big. But, yeah, you need some guys who can line up and go do that. And Tavon Coney can do that as well. But that you would expect that. And based on everything we've seen and heard, he's going to be out there even a lot more this year.
And then you've got Drew Tranquil, who I feel like is going to really explode this year, playing a position that is made for him, close to the line of scrimmage, go attack the ball carrier, be physical. And he's going to have to cover at times. But I just feel like, and you remember July, we were going through all these lists and who's going to do this the most and who's going to do that the most. I had Drew Tranquil high on my list for sacks, tackles for losses, tackles. If he stays healthy, I think you will see the best out of Drew Tranquil this year because of this new position that he has fallen into.
I agree with that. I mean, what Dalen Hayes is to Eric Hansen, Drew Tranquil is to you. You guys are both, and I don't blame you. I mean, just what we've seen, that there's every reason to believe that. We all thought that Drew Tranquil could benefit from playing closer to the line, and this position really suits his skills because of the combination of what you just talked about. He can do physical things, getting into the backfield, and he can also drop off, guard the flat, and some short-range stuff in coverage where there was a lot more space to cover back there when he was playing safety. And I'm right there with you, though. I agree. We're going to see some really good things from him this year.
In terms of depth, you've got Jameer Jones and probably Jonathan Jones behind Niles Morgan at middle linebacker. And if Niles would get injured, there could be a shifting of personnel, too, beyond that. You've got Tavon Coney and Asmar Bilal behind Martini at the weak side linebacker. Bilal factors in to the Rover position as well. Let's go ahead and go back and circle back and hear from Clark Lee and his thoughts on defensive coordinator Mike Elko. The two worked together at Wake Forest. Now they're together again at Notre Dame.
Hey, he's probably as good as I've been around with respect to being demanding. And not compromising standards, and at times being emotional with the players, you know, from a standpoint of addressing issues as they present themselves, and then circling back and providing the lesson that led to that, you know, interactions. So we're all emotional, and obviously when you play football or when you coach football, there's frustrations and that sometimes boil over into, you know, the way we communicate with each other. And so he's fiery. You know, he's a fiery guy that is competitive. I mean, you don't have to play pickup basketball with him for long to know that he wants to win really bad. But yet, like, a lot of guys that have that personality type don't have the ability to step back and take a big picture snapshot and then present it in a way where the kids understand. And so players buy into what he says because it's not just about the moment, it's about the teachable moment. And he always circles back with a lesson involved. And then in terms of the cerebral aspect of things, he is as good as I've been around from a standpoint of identifying opponent weaknesses and trying to expose them, or identifying matchup issues and trying to make sure that we put ourselves in the best possible position we could be in. And so a lot of that comes through in our game planning or our meeting as coaching, how we set the defense up, and then certainly in how he teaches the defense to the kids. And I feel like, come out of fall camp, these kids will be set up well, understanding situations, understanding offensive mindsets, and then at the end of the day, they'll play with confidence on the field because they know the call that's coming in is meant to put them in the best possible position to win.
Very insightful. Clark Lee, linebacker coach for the Fighting Irish, his thoughts on the leader of the defense, coordinator Mike Elko. Next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, we will have Rapid Fire. A reminder, tomorrow night from 5 to 6 o'clock, Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly live at our WSBT studios. He will be taking your phone calls throughout the hour. If you want to jot down the phone number, 574-282-2696, that will be the number tomorrow to ask your questions. Again, 574-282-2696. Sean and Eric will be in studio co-hosting the program with BK joining us live from 5 to 6 here on WSBT Radio. We greatly appreciate Coach Kelly taking time out to join us and allow you, the football fans, to ask him some questions tomorrow night. Plus, tomorrow night is the opener at Mishawaka High School. Caveman football on WSBT Radio. Mishawaka will take on Portage, and maybe I can ask a question about that at the conclusion of Rapid Fire, if you don't mind, since
sure.
You have all the great details.
Well,
all right, we'll do
I
that
hope so.
Coming up
I hope
next.
So.
I'll ask very easy questions,
all
I
right.
promise. We will have Rapid Fire and some Mishawaka Caveman football question or two coming up as Sports Beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT. Sports Beat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Darren Pritchett from Four Winds Field, Sean Stiers in our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. Notre Dame football coming up September 2nd against the Temple Owls. That's the season opener. All the action on WSBT Radio. Kickoff a little after 3:30. Pre-game coverage, as always, starts at 9 a.m. Sean, Eric, and I will have game day Sports Beat live from Notre Dame Stadium that day from noon until 2:30. Everything you need, on 96.1 FM WSBT. Well, we have had plenty of Notre Dame football conversation tonight. You've heard from Tom Reese, the quarterback coach, Clark Lee, the linebacker coach, Tyler James joined us for a recruiting update, and now we mix in a little bit of everything as Sean hosts Rapid Fire.
And we do have some more Notre Dame football to go with our Rapid Fire tonight. Fill in the blank on this first one, Darren. One of the things we found out talking to the assistant coaches yesterday is defensive line coach Mike Elston's comment, calling guard Quentin Nelson the lie detector. And this is blank.
Fantastic. That's a great analogy. If you want to know how far you have come as a football player, you put him up against the old bulldozer Quentin Nelson to see how they perform. So I thought that was the line of the day yesterday. The human lie detector, that's fantastic. Could not have done any better in describing what it's like to go up against Quentin Nelson.
That's right. It's like the man maker. I mean, it's an awesome nickname. You know, if you want to find out if you're legit, this is who you go up against. And we'll see if you're legit, if that's what you really think. And it won't take long to figure it out, just like when they strap you into the lie detector, I guess. But it's kind of like, a personal Oklahoma drill, I guess, where they line up and go mano a mano and all that kind of stuff, an instant barometer. But, yeah, I think it has to help out these defensive guys as well, some of these young guys that we've heard about who are kind of making some strides, them being able to go up against not just him, the other lineman too, but he's the guy that it's pretty telling, obviously, pretty quickly. And that's probably the quote of fall camp, I would have to say.
It's the grand slam, without a doubt.
Absolutely. All right, another one. Notre Dame and Purdue are going to expand their upcoming football series from 4 games to 6 games. It'll run from 2021 through 2028. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like the move for Notre Dame?
Well, I would assume Purdue is not going to turn into a powerhouse over a 4 or 5 year
right.
span. I'm not being mean to them, but
no.
I don't think they're going to turn into Penn State or Michigan, because there's some interesting schedules coming up. You brought it up during a recent rapid fire question. So there needs to be a little balance. You need to find some major college programs that you hope you can beat consistently, and you hope Purdue falls into that category. So I think it provides a nice balance to some of the things that are coming up with the ACC games. You got Ohio State coming on the schedule. There's a lot of interesting challenges. So you got to find those games that you hope you can post some victories against that particular program. And, you know, Jeff Braum maybe will do good things at Purdue, but it's awfully hard for anybody not named Michigan and Ohio State, Penn State, and we got to put Wisconsin in there after the last couple of decades. Everybody else just kind of comes and goes.
Yeah.
They go through cycles. Iowa gets good, then they come back to the pack. Maybe Illinois gets good for a while, then they come back to the pack. It just happens. So you got to find those teams that are maybe good for a year or two and then come back to the pack. You want to put them on the schedule.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And that's an interesting way of looking at it, because just saying Purdue, it doesn't move the needle very much by itself. But this is one of those kind of sneaky regional rivalries that went away because of the ACC arrangement that Notre Dame has, obviously. And all the uproar mm-hmm. at the time was over the Michigan series, ending, and even Michigan State ended. But it was more about Michigan. And while that's obviously a much more marquee game, Notre Dame and Michigan only played 42 times intermittently over the years, while the Irish played Purdue 68 straight years from 1946 to 2014, and that long-running rivalry ended. So I agree with what you're saying, and I guess I didn't even think about it from a balance standpoint, but that's in the lines of what I'm thinking. I would rather see a Purdue, for example, than some of these MAC teams that we're going to see here on the schedules in the next few years. I'd still rather see that, and it because it is regional, you do have a lot of people in this area who care about Purdue. So there will be a lot of interest when you see Notre Dame and Purdue played. And again, it was 68 straight times, and I think it was 86 times overall they've played over the years. So these are two teams that have played a lot. So for that aspect as well, I think it's good. So I give it a 7 anyway to be able to see it come back, and they'll be able to play for 7 straight years.
I'd rather play Michigan State more consistently than Purdue.
Yeah, but back to what you're talking about with the balance thing, it probably makes more sense to have, for considering some of those teams that Notre Dame does have on those schedules once you start getting into that range there with Arkansas and Wisconsin and all those that we were talking about.
Right.
All right. Do we need to take a break, Darren, or you want to just go up for a couple more minutes here? What do you want to do?
We actually have only one more break left, so we're in good shape.
Okay. Fill in the blank on this one. This was an interesting one that I saw. The Cubs have given former manager and current White Sox manager Rick Renteria a World Series ring. So if you were Renteria, you would do blank with that ring.
I mean, I would think you would have to keep it. It's kind of awkward since he did a great job managing the team in 2000, was it 14, when the rebuild was just starting to get going and some of the guys were coming to the majors, Anthony Rizzo, for example. And then Madden became available, and they dumped him along the side of the road, and I had no problem with it. Yeah, it didn't look good, but you had a chance to acquire one of the best managers in baseball, so it's awfully hard to just say, well, this is a really nice guy. Let's leave him in the position, and yeah, we'll see what happens. Now, when you got a chance to get Joe Madden, you go do it, so I don't blame them. And I give the Cubs a lot of credit for reaching out and giving Renteria a ring. I think that was a very, very classy move by them, something that they did not have to do. But they recognized he did a nice job for them a couple of years ago. I'm glad he got another chance to manage. Hopefully it works out with the White Sox. He's in a similar spot there. So if I'm Rick, I go ahead and take the ring. I think it was a very nice sentiment by the Chicago Cubs to try to, I'm going to say, ease over a very uncomfortable situation, because I'm sure the two sides, there's no animosity from Renteria's standpoint. I think he understood. I just thought it was a nice sentiment. You take it and you say thank you.
I definitely think it's a nice gesture. Maybe they're going overboard a little bit. I mean, Bartman's got a ring now, which was still a really nice gesture on their part, don't get me wrong. But then I guess they also gave former general manager Jim Hendry and also Dale Swaim a ring, who was the manager before Renteria. So, I mean, they went way back handing out these rings. So, I don't know. Did Tony Dungy get a ring, a Super Bowl ring, when John Gruden and the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl? It's a nice gesture on the Cubs' part again. Don't get me wrong. But if I were Renteria, I mean, it's not like I'm going to wear the Cubs World Series ring around. This was 2 years after they fired him, and it was a really awkward situation. I guess if I really felt like I was part of the thing, I might put it on a mantle or something. Maybe he could put it in a time capsule and bury it out in center field at Guaranteed Rate Field, and then when the White Sox get good, he'll go dig it out and have matching rings or something. I don't know. That or auction it off for charity or something. I just wouldn't feel comfortable. It's nice that the Cubs did it, but I don't think if I were any of those guys, I'd necessarily feel comfortable ever wearing a Cubs World Series ring around, or a ring of any team that I wasn't actually a part of that organization at the time that they won it, or even 2 years removed from the time they won it.
Well, all I know is the AA Cubs broadcaster got a ring and the South Bend broadcaster did not, and I would have happily worn a Cubs ring as a Cardinal fan. I'm dead serious. I would have proudly worn that. I think it's just one of those special pieces of merchandise that you just can't say no to.
So Rick Renteria has a ring and Derek Pritchett doesn't have a ring. There is some injustice right now. But you were part of the organization, though. You were more a part of the organization than Renteria at that point.
Well, you say that very loosely. I'm the most unimportant person in the South Bend Cubs franchise.
Well, I don't know about
that. Without
a doubt. I don't know about that. You connect that organization to thousands of people across the country and even the world. So that's more important than I think you're giving yourself credit for.
And if they win again, since you do games with me from time to time, we'll split the ring in half.
Okay, sounds good. Speaking of play-by-play announcers, Darren, two things announced this week. One is ESPN veteran Beth Mowins is going to call NFL games this season for CBS. Mm-hmm. And also, Showtime is going to do a season with Navy football. It's the same thing that they did with Notre Dame a couple of years ago, the behind-the-scenes thing. So, which of those two piques your interest more?
You know, I guess the whole inside the program thing, it's been done a lot. You see it in the NFL. The Buccaneers are going through that on HBO right now.
Right.
So I don't know if there's anything that would surprise me. I guess with being Navy and some of the stories that can be told of the football players and what they do, I mean, throughout the day, I mean, they have such a busy schedule. But I think Beth Mowins is a really, really good play-by-play broadcaster. I think it's great that we're seeing females now breaking into the professional game at the highest level in the National Football League. So I guess I'm intrigued to see how Beth does. I think she's on CBS, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, she's going to be on CBS, and she's actually going to call that Monday night, the Chargers-Broncos Monday night game opening weekend for ESPN. So that's an interesting combo that she's got between ESPN and CBS. But she'll be calling games with Jay Feely on CBS once the season gets going.
Okay. Interesting. Well, they've had some awkward combinations on that second Monday night game on ESPN. So I think she'll do a great job. And I'll be listening intently as a Bronco fan, so I will give you a proper grade, but I think she's going to do fantastic. She's a really solid broadcaster.
Well, see, and that's I'm definitely interested in both. And as you said, the Buccaneers are on Hard Knocks, and I'm not a Buccaneers fan, but I'm watching this season of Hard Knocks just like I've done with all the Hard Knocks before, just because I find that interesting. But in terms of actual intrigue, I don't know how intrigued I would be to see what's going on behind the scenes with Navy football, with the exception of there are probably some unique traditions and things that they do on a daily basis that maybe we don't get to see, so that there'd be some interest. But I'm definitely more intrigued by Mowens because she's just going to be the second female to ever call network NFL games. And the first one, it's been 30 years ago since it happened. And, I mean, I know I've heard Mowens call a game before. I can't say that it was memorable enough that I remember anything about it, but I think I can say that about a lot of the other network announcers for that matter. I'm watching the game, and I'm not necessarily piqued by what's going on, but because this is going to be so unique, I am definitely intrigued by it, and I think there's going to be a lot of interest to see how she stacks up on a weekly basis with her male counterparts, because this is still a male-dominated industry, yes, the sportscasting industry. And so I think there's going to be a lot of focus on her, especially in the early going, to see just how she does. And I mean, and to be honest, I've heard some of our counterparts in this industry who are upset that she's getting this opportunity because they don't think that she is necessarily the one. So I think there's going to be a lot on it. And we will – I mentioned that Monday night game. She's also going to be doing Colts-Browns, I saw, on September 24th. So people in this area are going to have some reason to watch her as well. She'll be doing Colts-Browns on the 24th of September.
Okay. Well, I think she's a pretty solid broadcaster.
No,
there
I do, too.
Some sour grapes in our industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know how that goes.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, I believe that's all we've got for tonight, Darren.
All right, very good. That's rapid fire for today. It is 15 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. And Legacy Heating and Air will keep the conversation going, I guess. Do we have to take another break? I don't think we do. We actually can talk for a couple more moments here. We've got a little different break schedule today. So the Cubs lose 13-10 to the Cincinnati Reds. So the Brewers, I feel like I've counted them out 10 times in the last 3 weeks. And the Cubs continue to allow them to feel really good about themselves. Only now a game out of first, St. Louis is two game back. You know, you've heard me say this. I've said all year St. Louis is a flawed team, and the only reason they have a playoff chance is because the Cubs have not played up to their potential. It's August 17th now. I just don't know if it's going to happen. I gave them the benefit of the doubt all summer, but it's now August 17th, and I just don't know how you can flip the switch. They are who they are. We have such a huge sample size, Sean. It's going to be a team that's going to have to scratch and claw. With John Lester struggling today, boy, oh, boy, that brings up a whole different level of concern.
No, I know, and I think you kind of alluded to it. It's a flashback to that start that he had against the Pirates right before the All-Star break. But there's no getting around the fact that you split four games with a team that's 20 games under 500 at this point in the season. And this was losing one game was bad enough, and now they lose a game like this as well on a day where they hit a barrage of home runs. The only minor silver lining to come out of this thing is Kyle Schwarber got his batting average up over the Mendoza line. He's over 200 now after going 3-for-5 today. And I mean, he's really kind of, when you look at Kyle Schwarber, he is sort of the antithesis of what the Cubs have done this season. He had gone 8 straight trips to the plate striking out, and then he went on a streak of 8 straight times on base entering today's game, and then he goes 3-for-5. So it's kind of binge and purge for both Schwarber and the Cubs this season. It cracks me up because I know the Cubs bullpen has struggled here in the last couple of weeks, but it cracks me up to hear Cubs fans complain about the Cubs bullpen because, yeah, they've had their problems, but I'm telling you what, as a guy who's watched the Royals and is a Royals fan, I would sure not mind having Wade Davis back in Kansas City, because their bullpen has just been putrid this season, and somehow they're just one game back in the wild card race still.
Mm. Anything can happen right now in the wild cards. The American League is insane how tight that race is, and Rockies and the Diamondbacks have to play the Dodgers a little bit yet before the end of the year, and that can bring a lot of teams back into play. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds, and by Legacy Heating and Air. Sean, you're going to be on the program tomorrow from 5 to 6, helping out with the live appearance by Brian Kelly in studio, so enjoy that, and maybe back into the 6 o'clock hour when you're all settled at Steel Stadium. We'll chat with you then.
All right. Sounds good. We'll be getting ready to go over there.
Sounds good. There you go. Sean Snyder's voice of the Cavemen, Mishawaka and Portage. The opening kickoff tomorrow night at 7:30. Pregame coverage will start at 7:20. South Bend Cubs baseball comes your way next. This is Cubs baseball and weekday sports beat on 96.1 FM WSBT.